It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 674. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. The name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. And facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. The show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code Mike Tech Show for your free 15-day trial. And you can go to instanthousecall.com directly, download the trial, enter the promo code. And away you go. Jam-packed show again. I have multiple client stories. Some are going to be intertwined into an email. Let's talk about the Marriott data breach. Spam. Having lots of problems on clients still sending email and it's being caught in spam filters. Going to talk about that. The system crashed from the snowstorm a couple weeks ago from a client. A Mac reset that solved a common problem I'm seeing when people upgrade to the Mac OS X, QuickBooks, an unbelievable story today that I have to talk about. And then it is absolutely worth its weight in gold, a link on support tools for QuickBooks that I have. Then a project that's beginning on Monday that's going to lead into some things. Two emails, one's about Outlook, and then I'm going to share an Outlook story. Before we begin, I want to talk about TechCon Unplugged 2019 in Grand Rapids, Michigan, the weekend of September 20th through the 22nd. Link will be in the show notes. It's techconunplugged.com. Get your tickets. It's inexpensive. It'll be a lot of fun. I will be there. Details will be flowing as we move forward. I want to begin tonight's show with the Marriott breach. 500 million Marriott customers have had their data hacked. This is an article that's saying, this is what you do instead of freaking out. When I seen this, this really scared me because I'm a very big Marriott Rewards client. I filter every single business charge through a credit card that amasses incredible points. And when you see me traveling to like New York or to Florida, I am using my Marriott points. I amass many, many points because if it's not helping my point total, then I don't buy it that way. Everything I do is about the points, and I filter it through one credit card, and it happens to be a credit card that's tied to Marriott Rewards. But I do not have the Starwood account, which is where the breach was, and I have not received an email. Now, supposedly today, if your account was one of those 500 million, you received an email from Marriott. Now, this is just laziness because I don't go to the Starwood chain of hotels, but interesting that the breach came from there. It was a guest authorization database that millions of people had a combination of their name, address, passport number, date of birth, and other information stolen. This has been going on, they said, since 2014. How can that be? How is that acceptable today? I know breaches are commonplace, and Equifax made that very clear. There was no punishment there. They just continued to operate. there used to be some consequences for having data breaches and you have lack of security. There's absolutely none. That's why you got to take everything into your hands. Now, the article for the link that I'm going to have actually has some good things. First, you have to find out if you have been compromised. This is always good. Use secure passwords on all your accounts, including your online shopping accounts. Understand how to freeze your credit and do that. That's very important so people cannot set up new accounts for you. I believe in this no matter what. And you got to monitor all of your money regularly. You absolutely have to keep an eye on all your credit cards, on all your bank statements. I'm looking at them probably every other day, making sure that I have not been breached or there hasn't been a problem. And I've had credit cards. I've done everything and still have had a credit card because I swear there's a gas station I don't go to anymore. I swear that there's a false swipe that anytime I've went to this gas station, I've had a problem with a breach. I've had clients that had a couple gas stations in Florida. Gas stations are a very common place of having your credit card compromised. Now, something that bothers me about this country. When I went to Mexico, when I went to Canada, when I went to Germany in the past, if you are using your credit card in a restaurant, they come to the table with the reader. They never take possession of your credit card. I love that. In this country, we give up our credit card and it's gone for sometimes quite a while. How do we know what they're doing and copying with it? Really? We're trusting that waiter or waitress? I have a big problem with that. And I think that's where a lot of identity theft is. We are so behind in the USA for the breaches and the security. It's mind-boggling that a country as so technologically evolved as we are, we're so backward in data breaches, identity theft, and how we handle credit cards and that information. It's really sad. Just wanted to let everybody know the Marriott breach is just another big one that, you know, they're going to happen all the time. And that's why it's up to us to do everything humanly possible. Something they don't mention, which would be a big help, two-factor authentication. Whatever you can do it, add that. Two-factor authentication, very important. And if you go back to some past Mike Tech shows, I've done many, many updates on what to do for security. I even had a PDF that you could download, and it has great tips. All of these things are very valid, and you can go back, and the information is still very, very current, and it will help protect your assets, your identity. This week and last week, I have been dealing with many, many clients complaining that they're sending email to people that aren't receiving it. It's being trapped in the recipient's spam filter. And some of my clients were SureWeb, but there's other clients that are all over, all different email providers. Two things I recommend if you're running into this. That's a big help. And one is the email blacklist check. And what you do is run the domain through this website, and it will report back whether that domain is listed in blacklists. What that means, if your domain or the IP address that you're sending from is listed, there's a whole bunch of services that many email providers and many users and companies subscribe to blocking spam, and they rely on these companies that are blocking. They're relying on their determination on whether they should block someone or not. So a very big problem that, and I've spoken about this a few times, there's a couple things you do. Me, as a business owner for doing tech support, every one of my clients, every one of the vendors that I deal with, I whitelist their domain. Yes, that puts me at risk. If my client gets infected and sends me something, it's not going to get blocked. But I would rather get that than have an important email be blocked when it shouldn't be. And this started happening for one of my clients that I had them start whitelisting all of their customers, all of their vendors. It's a lot of work, but it's well worth it. As you're sending messages, you check to see if you're on the blacklist. And if you are, then you go through the process of getting delisted. One of the things to get listed, somebody's system on that network might have been compromised and sending out a lot of spam. So then that IP address or the domain gets flagged and you get put on a list. If you're on a list, the first thing you got to do is a deep cleaning on all of the computers on the network. Then start applying to get delisted. I'm going to tell you about a problem for one client that we're working on. We're going to come back to that. Second, your signature could be flagged as spam. Do you have a lot of HTML tags? Do you have graphics? If you have a complicated signature that's just not plain text-based, you got to dump it. You got to be plain text-based in your signature, or there's a good chance your email is going to get flagged as spam. That's just the way it is. Yes, it looks pretty, but you know what? We need functional over good-looking. You're going to have to get rid of those links and get rid of the graphics because you don't know the mail provider of the person you're sending it to. You don't know how they're blocking spam, and you don't want your email to be blocked. Go with a simple text-based signature. Now, getting back, if you're sending from Outlook, and let's say you have a domain, abc.com, and abc.com is not listed on any spam, what is the current IP address, even if it's DHCP, for their internet provider? One of my clients, they were able to go to webmail and send mail, and their client got it. But if they sent it from Outlook, their client didn't get it. So it's coming from the IP address that's behind the domain. That's their internet provider. The IP address is blacklisted on several spam filters, but it's a block of IP addresses from Verizon, and you cannot delist it. So how do you do that? So you are being, when you're DHCP and you're a business, you are being lumped into a category with users that are part of that ISP that can be doing bad things, or they don't know they're doing bad stuff, and they're being flagged, and someone's blocking an entire subnet. I think that's wrong, and that's not a good approach. So the best way to handle this, get a static IP address. I've had to do that in the past, but it's just something I wanted to bring up so you have options if you have clients that are going into this. First, you got to see, can you delist them? Next, check their IP address. If they're only getting DHCP, this is a reason to maybe get a static IP address with their ISP. System crash a couple weeks ago. I mentioned a problem. One of my bigger clients, one of their main engineers, their system crashed. It was horrible. We could not boot into Windows 7 ever again. And rather than take it apart, I asked the client, I asked the user, is there anything on there? Because they have server-based all their files. And he says, Mike, there is nothing on that computer that I care about. You could just blow it away. I said, rather than put Windows 7 on it again, can I upgrade you to Windows 10? I installed that in 10 minutes because this machine, since he's an engineer and they run with SolidWorks, is a beast. High-end Xeon processor, incredible SSD, NVRAM, beautiful Quadra NVIDIA graphics card, 32 gigs of memory. It's a beast. Windows 10 installed perfectly. He is up and running, doing great. And that's what I did during that snowstorm, was redoing it. But I thought I was going to have to pull out the drive, get the data off, then put it back in. And I was so glad I didn't have to mess with that. So it made it a lot easier for the repair. And Windows 7 just died. It just crashed, never to boot again. And I tried a whole bunch of things, trying to get in, trying to go last known boot, trying system restore points from, wasn't having it. That just was not happening. That thing just wasn't booting again. And there was nothing wrong with the drive. Ran some tests. Everything was good. that's hardware diagnostics, everything was good. So the Windows operating system got corrupt, and the answer was redo to Windows 10. And then my son delivered it the next day. QuickBooks story. Today, had a client that today we were scheduling to go from QuickBooks 2014 Premium 3 user to QuickBooks 2019 Premium 3 user. They were having some issues with some Windows 10 workstations, occasionally getting some errors. And working with QuickBooks support, a week ago, they recommended, they said, look, we really don't support 2014 anymore. We want you to upgrade to the latest version. So I talked to the owner. They said yes. And this is a company, property management company, that has like 20 different QuickBooks files. They have Active Directory, a domain controller, nice HP ProLiant running SBS Server 2008. Yes, it's old. And we've been talking about upgrading. When you have a server environment where there's multi-user in QuickBooks, after we did the purchase and we downloaded it, you go to the server or whatever is hosting the files and you run that first to then upgrade with the newer database manager program. So the first thing I do is try to run the QuickBooks 2019 install, and I get an error immediately. Now, the error states you're running Windows Server 2011, which we're not, and it's not compatible because you no longer get security updates. Well, Server 2008 is listed as approved for 2019. Now, luckily, my bookkeeper was on site with me, and he has premium support because he's a QuickBooks Pro advisor. He gets into support right away and he turns it over to me. And now I'm working with the tech. What we try first is I was running it from a drive. So I copy the install file locally and I run it as administrator. I'm just not having it. I still get the error. This could be the most important link that I could have ever discussed on the Mike Tech Show that I am going to right now put in the chat, and then I'm going to describe how do you get to it. And this tech shared this with me. He says, we got to download a diagnostic tool. And this is a tool I have never seen before. And he says, I want you to Google QuickBooks space support space URLs. URLs. QuickBooks support URLs. You Google that. The first link will bring you to commonly used tools and links. What a find here. You have the Microsoft .NET Framework Repair Tool. You have Automated Password Reset Tool, Complex Password Verification Tool, CP3 Tool, a link to the Downloads and Updates, File Exchange Tool, IDP Cleaner Tool, and this one that we ran, Install Diagnostic Tool. That takes forever, by the way, because it's checking all of the settings, all of the .NET. It'll repair the .NETs that need repair. By the way, after we ran that and it took forever, there was no joy. We still had the problem. And then the tech discovered something. So let me continue. Name change forms, a PDF tool, QuickBooks Desktop Print and PDF Repair Tool, Primary Contact Change Form, QuickBooks Clean Install Tool. By the way, I asked him about that. That all that really does is rename three folders and then allows you to do a clean install. QuickBooks Conversion Tool, and then Updated File Doctor. Now, File Doctor is always easy to find, and lots of support have always mentioned that. And I've worked with that tool, but I've never worked with these other tools. Now, that diagnostics tool that took an hour to run, we still had the same problem. He went back and started digging, and he found something. Windows Server 2008 is not supported. It's really, and especially SBS, it's 2008 R2 is the version that's supported, not SBS 2008. So now I have to tell the owner that he spent a lot of money on this upgrade for QuickBooks, and it will not work because the server needs to be updated. Now, I am not going to update that server And I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to downgrade it to a nice desktop running Windows 10 because all they have is files to share and they need the QuickBooks database manager. That's it. Years ago, I migrated them from Exchange Local to Exchange Cloud-based. They had some other software that we also migrated to the cloud. So I got them away from needing a big, expensive physical server. So I'm putting together very inexpensive replacement option that keeps them current, keeps them secure, and they're not going to be throwing away money on a big beast that they really don't need anymore. I'm going to be recommending a nice Dell workstation that's a full tower. I'm going to have a nice like 500 gig bootable drive as an SSD, but then I'll have a 2 terabyte drive as a secondary drive, that's their data, and they're not even coming close to that. Then I'll have Shadow Protect as the backup, which they have now, and I will get the desktop license, and away we go. Now, my biggest challenge, and this is going to be for a future show that I will absolutely talk about, is downgrading the profiles from a domain controller to a local profile. And with that profile wizard that I've used and talked about, is a tremendous program. I will absolutely be doing that for the users. So we're going to need a day to schedule this and make this happen. And I'm sure there will be stories, but that's what I'm going to do. And this leads to what I'm going to begin on Monday with a new client. They have Windows Server, Small Business Server 2008. We have to upgrade it just for security reasons. And they have this big HP ProLiant, and they're a domain controller. Now, they need a real server. The hardware is only 3 years old. So I ran the serial number. They still qualified for purchasing, and it wasn't that expensive for purchasing next day on-site support still from HP. So I said, the hardware is fine. All we're going to need is to get the latest server operating system and migrate to that. But right now, they're using Exchange. So Monday, we're going to begin the project plan and the process for moving all of their accounts to local, to a hosted Exchange. And I'm going to move them to Sherweb. That's the vendor I like using. And what I will do is I'm going to have them set up the account and then I'll start creating all the accounts. And I believe December 15th is Saturday. We've already scheduled the exact migration. And my son and I will go in and we'll have to export all their data from each of the workstations to PSTs. Then I upload them and I have a whole process for this migration. But step one is getting Exchange off that server. So that way, when we do the migration to the new operating system, it's going to be a lot easier. That's something that I'm going to begin on Monday. So lots of good projects happening here towards the end of the year. And then I know the beginning of the year, I got a big client move from their warehouse from one location to another. And I haven't even done the walkthrough yet. I've just reached out and we're going to be doing a walkthrough, find out what all the wiring and everything. What am I dealing with here? Client bought an old church and rectory. The church is being converted to the warehouse and the rectory is going to be the office. I don't know what I'm going to inherit from a networking standpoint. So it's going to be very interesting whether we can leverage anything that's already being used. And then I got to look at the plans that he has, what walls are coming down and everything. So I haven't had that walkthrough. Can't wait. Love doing that work from scratch where I'm responsible for the network design and build out from the beginning. So it'll be completely under my control. Really like that. That's the way to do it. Want to talk about a problem I've had a couple clients have when they upgraded to Mac OS X Mojave. You want to check out this link that will be in the show notes to reset the NVRAM or PRAM on your Mac. How to set NVRAM, you have to hold the Option, Command, P, and R while you're starting up. The instructions will be in the show notes. Don't even try to write that down. Check out the link. It fixed the problem. So here's what happens. When you upgrade to Mojave, and this is not all the systems, but you upgrade to Mojave, and now your Wi-Fi and your Ethernet no longer work. Almost no matter what you do, it doesn't work. You got to go through this reset. I even know, and shame on Apple, I had someone that I didn't know the fix, and they took it to the Apple store, and the Apple store wiped the system and redid it. That was their answer. And all they had to do was reset the NVRAM, and they could have fixed the problem. Why didn't they know that? Aren't they the geniuses? Is it the genius bar? I'm just had to get that in there. I was very, very surprised. So it's a link for your tool bag for any time you run into a Mac user with this problem. Let's get to two emails here, and then we'll wrap up. This is from Bob. 1809 is available again. The 1809 referring to Windows 10. Just started 1809 upgrade process again. Now they have turned it back on. Two things to be aware of with the new Windows 10 1809 update. They now include the download folder as part of the disk cleanup utility. I talked about that when I first downloaded that and noticed it. Oh my. Now it's unchecked. At least they unchecked it. But people that were complaining about the first go around on 1809, they were complaining that they were losing files. And that was one of the reasons, because when they ran the cleanup utility, they checked everything. You cannot blindly check everything in the Windows cleanup utility. You must perform a due diligence of checking each one and determine, do you really want to download that? Because there's a downloads folder and a lot of people store stuff there. You don't want to delete that. He continues, make sure you don't select that folder when you are running it if you want to keep your download items. At least on the systems I upgraded, the default setting on the checkbox was not checked. But if I had just gone through and checked all the boxes like I used to do in the past, I would have deleted 1.6 gigs of downloaded files that I wanted to keep. The other thing that I noticed was this message I got after the upgrade saying that Home Group was removed from Windows. So if you're using that to share files and printers, you will have to do some reconfiguring. And they have this message, finish installing device software compatibility assistant, Home Group removed from Windows. Visit the Windows website to learn more about how to share files and printers without Home Group. I never used Home Group. I know they put it in there for people to use to make it simpler to share things in a home. Well, if you did that, Microsoft, why are you taking it away now? Because you're definitely going to impact people that have used it. Now, I would always elect not to use that, and I want it control and naturally share the way you're supposed to on any kind of network sharing for files and printers. But something to be aware of if you're upgrading or you know people upgrading to 1809. Bob, thanks for the email. This is from Daryl. Outlook 2016 not responding issue. I apologize if you've already answered this in another podcast, but I am working as the full-time IT support for a car dealership in Australia, and I have a user who is using Outlook 2016, and whenever they are sending a calendar invite to multiple recipients, Outlook starts not responding on them. So far, I have tried installing all updates and Windows Office, disabling all add-ins, checking computers power settings. They are also running Windows 10 1803, but they continue to experience this issue. When this issue occurs, I have checked Task Manager and all computer resources are barely used. I don't know if this will have anything to do with it, but we are currently using a Linux-hosted mail server, which I believe is PostFix, which we administer via the Webmin interface hosted in the same site the user is based. And the PST file that their calendar is stored in is mapped to a NAS. Also, at the same site as the user, I have searched multiple websites but still have not found a solution. Any ideas for me to try next will be greatly appreciated. I really enjoy listening to the show. Keep up the good work. Regards, Daryl. Daryl, a couple things that you haven't mentioned that I want you to try, and you might have already tried these. Do a quick, do a full Office 2016 repair. Go to Programs and Features, right-click, pick Change, pick Repair. Now, there's two repair options. Do the online, the big repair. See if that fixes it. One. Two, do you have any other users that's in the same scenario? I don't like hosting a PST on a network drive. I like keeping it local and then at night having something that makes sure they close Outlook and we back up the PST to the server. I don't like pulling information from a NAS or a server for the PST. I know I'm going to get a lot of grief on that. A lot of people are set up with that, but I've seen so many problems with that. I would like you to try to move that locally, even if it's just testing, and see if that goes away. Have you started Outlook.exe in safe mode? You type Outlook.exe/safe. Run it in safe mode. Actually has fixed things. Then run it in normal mode. Did that solve the problem? And then one last thing. This sounds crazy. Find the exact location of the executable for Outlook EXE. Right-click and pick Run as Administrator. Sometimes the only way to get rid of add-ins properly is to do that, or you're not able to, or you're not able to perform adding an add-in. I have a client, attorneys, that they have this Needles add-in for their software, and anytime I'm redoing, I already know I can't add that add-in to their Outlook unless I start Outlook as an administrator, even though I am an administrator on that machine. Does it make sense? But that's something I had to learn. And you remember that forever once you run into something like that. So, Daryl, let me know if those things help. Now, this segues into a story this week where a client was having problems with their Outlook 2010. And something that when users try to fix things themselves, it just gets ugly. So they thought that uninstalling out Office and reinstalling, well, what happens if you don't have the proper version of Outlook? They found some CD at the company that was home and business, Office 2010, but we installed Office 2010 Professional Plus. So the first thing I thought of was that's where we went wrong. So let's uninstall that, because then they contacted me because it keeps asking for their password and it won't accept their Exchange hosted password to get their email. There's several things happening here. The real solution is Outlook was running in multiple instances. Even when you close Outlook, and this happens with QuickBooks too, when certain software, they don't behave properly, and when you exit, it really doesn't close. Have you had that happen with Chrome or Firefox? You have to check Task Manager, take a look, see if something else is running. I do this first now. If something doesn't run right, I look, is it still running and it just hasn't told me that it hasn't exited properly? And that solves many, many problems. Especially when I had problems with Firefox, some of the older versions, I would hate it. It was like, oh, it won't load. What's going on? And then I see 10 instances of Firefox running. So kill them all, and then Firefox loads. This happens with QuickBooks. This happens with Outlook, especially the older Outlook, like Outlook 2010, which I still love. We uninstalled Outlook and then uninstalled Office, reinstalled the right version of Office. Same problem with the password. But I knew what the answer was. Anytime you reinstall Outlook 2010 on Windows 10, you will not verify on any Exchange server until you perform the Office updates. You have to check for updates, and it takes forever, and you have all the service packs and all the Outlook, all the whole Office suite of updates. You have to get current or you will not be able to log in. Remember that. If you have a client and they've done a reinstall, maybe they didn't tell you they reinstalled, but all of a sudden their password doesn't work and you've confirmed that the password is correct because you tested it on the webmail and it worked. Why isn't it taking the password to connect to an Exchange server? It's because you have to update. I think it needs, like, Outlook 2010 needs Service Pack 2 or something, or Service Pack 3. I'm not sure which one. Just do all the updates, then begin to enter your password. So that's another great tip. I think we're done. The best way to support the Mike Tech Show and TechVect, Carrie Holzman and myself, use the Amazon link that we share that's in the show notes. It'll bring you to the Amazon site. Anything you buy during that session only, we will get a commission. And your price stays the same, and it's a great way to support the show. You're going to be buying stuff for someone this holiday season at Amazon. Just abuse that link for me. Share it. Anybody you know, that will really help Carrie Holzman and myself, and we greatly appreciate that. Also, Instant House Call. Go to instanthousecall.com. Check out the trial. You're going to love it for all your remote support solutions. And then, of course, Fabs Auto Backup 7 Pro. My son is scheduled for 2 clients next week that he will be using that, where the clients have new machines. One of them's a laptop, one of them's a desktop. That's what he's going to be using to transfer all of that information from the one system to the other. Can't live without Fabs Auto Backup 7 Pro. Link will be in the show notes. That's it, everybody. Have a great weekend, and I will see you hopefully back on regular schedule on next Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time live. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.